Ooh, happy Friday. Shout out to Rebecca Black. Is that the woman that had the Friday song at one point? I think it was. What's up, guys? This is your friend, colleague, confidant. I don't know, maybe lover one day, Michael Burns. I'm streaming right here from the Michael Burns channel. I think we're live. I think it's working. As you know, at the beginning of every show, I have to say over and over, are we live? Is it working? Is this part of it? Okay, so I see the chat here. I don't see the chat here. That's annoying. Okay, there we go. There we go. Now I'm seeing the chat. Now it's popping up on the screen. Oh, here we go. Here's all the gang. Techno Poverty, if you're here, maybe pop on at the end or pop on halfway through if you want to chat. Great. So we're here. We got a lot to talk about today. We'll try to keep it tight. Just a reminder that, there's a place where I used to stream that I'm not going to be streaming anymore, but I'm going to be streaming from here. Can't keep doing this forever because I have to take care of my mom and try to get some Moderna, but you rock, Jacob. That's incredibly nice. But please take care of your mom. Your mom sounds lovely. But let's talk about some stuff. We got a lot of stuff going on. And yeah, just a reminder, we're streaming from here. Steven, what's up? Shouts to South Africa, except Elon Musk. Fuck him. You guys should have kept him. People are listening to new records. They're having a good Friday. We love to see it. Hold on a second. Okay. So let's start with this. Tariffs. Have you heard of them? Many of us have. Many of us don't know what they are. Many of us don't know how they work. And I don't fully get how they work. I don't fully get what they're supposed to be, what they're supposed to do, how they're supposed to operate. But I want to learn about tariffs. I want to learn about them with you. Let's see. Let's start with an article on the American Prospect. Let me get some ads off of this page before I share with you. I'm getting all these ads for Brian Johnson's Blueprint stuff, the guy that wants to live forever, because I'm working on a video about him right now. So I've been reading all the shit about him. It's tough. It's real tough. Okay. Thank you, CE Rouse. I really appreciate that. Oh, Apocalypse just announced the fourth round of layoffs of their job since 2.5 years. How's everyone doing? Wow. Jelly Spread, he has strawberries, bananas, and kombucha. Yeah, Porkins. Doing it for Porkins. Porkins in a video I'm working on right now, I'm talking about slop in the script. And then I was like, maybe I'll put a visual of like an Am Porkins comment on screen. But then I was like, maybe I would probably have to ask Porkins, if I was allowed to do that. Let's check something out. This is the one I want to look at. Okay. Let's learn about tariffs. It's what everyone's talking about. All the kids are talking about tariffs. This is an article from, I thought I, where did this article freaking go, man? I'm so bad at computer sometimes, guys. I'm so bad at computer. There we go. It's my David Dayan. It's from yesterday over at the American Prospect. And basically, the thing with the tariffs, and I'm not an economist, that I know very little about economics. I'm bad at money, is that they don't make economic sense. That's what I do know. I know that if you listen to, bless me, if you listen to economists talk, economists talk about it, they point out that the tariffs don't make any sense economically, and that they're not going to do anything positive for the American economy. They're going to cost consumers, and they're also not going to lead to an increase in manufacturing, which is the promise made there. So SB says, I'm watching the stock market plunge and the expectations of recession and stagflation rise, along with everyone else. I'm aware of the innumeracy, ooh, big word, of the Trump administration apparently using a shortcut AI formula to reset global trade imbalances and try to bullshit their way through criticism. So this is a thing. I'm sure many of you have seen this. Someone tweeted out, I'm not going to screen share this right now, but you can see it if you want. I'll actually post this one in the chat in case anyone in their own free time wants to look at this. What's up to everyone in the chat? Thank you for being here. Thank you for hanging out. Love to see you. Yeah, we'll set five. I'm going to say this right now. Let's set 500 as our raw dome number for right now for streams over here. That is our raw dome number, 500. But basically, it looks like the federal government used an AI formula. Like they asked Grok or Gemini or ChatGPT how to do tariffs. But David says, I think we give too much credit to Donald Trump and his lieutenants when we suggest that they're pursuing a misguided trade policy, that they're pairing tariffs with the necessary steps to boost domestic manufacturing. Those things are true, of course. U.S. trade policy has been deeply inadequate for decades, favoring multinationals over workers and the environment, giving benefits to those corporations and free trade agreements that could never get through normal legislative channels, handing over economic decisions to Wall Street. And that's like the weird thing with a lot of Trump stuff is it's like he's able to bullshit just enough to connect some of these insane policies to workers, because like, of course, shoring up overseas manufacturing, pushing, making it way more advantageous for corporations to produce things overseas and not in America. Like all of this, of course, fucks workers in the beehole. But the way he frames it makes it seem like this stuff is going to have a positive effect on the working class in America. I've not seen any evidence to say that would happen. But this author, David Dayan, says they're not really tariffs at all. What? Not tariffs at all. Then what are we doing here? Half Dome. This is why Porkins is a legend in their field. Sure, in some functional sense, Trump announced a set of levies to be collected on imports upon their entry into the country, but a tariff policy would consider whether Americans have the wherewithal to make that good domestically, whether component parts that go to the U.S. manufacturing should be targeted, same rate as finished goods, and whether government policy has incentivized the transition to domestic production to encourage the investment. Even the Gilded Age era that Trump looks at longingly did not feature across-the-board tariffs. The famed McKinley tariff, you guys know, the famed McKinley tariff of 1890, cut tariffs on sugar. What Trump is doing is a sanction policy, only he's doing it against the whole world all at once for the assumed harm of ripping off the United States for decades. So sanctions seem to be what's really happening here, not tariffs. Going to the next paragraph, it says, it is not at all surprising that Trump sees the appeal in sanctions. It is no different from a mob boss moving into town and sending his thugs to every business on Main Street, roughing up the proprietors and asking for protection money so they don't get pushed out of business. I think this is the thing, the mob boss thing. Trump comes from a world of New York. Now, he's not like a tough guy, but he interacted with tough guys and did business with like sketchy tough guys. And obviously his mentor was Roy Cohn, who modeled himself as a sort of like tough guy, badass. And it seems like what's happening here is on the global scale, Trump is trying to use some like tough guy, mob boss, big boy logic to create policies, which is fun. Check in with the chat. Nice to see you all here. Like the thing, if you want to like the thing. Says Trump believes that the U.S. is indispensable enough that it can intimidate every country on earth. I don't think this is true. And I think this is where the bullshit is going to get called, because I don't think other countries on earth are as afraid of America as they once were. I don't think they're economically as dependent on America as they once were. I don't think they're as dependent on U.S. trade as they once were. Yeah, he's asking for protection money, which would take many forms. I mean, think about like a mob movie, a Scorsese movie of sorts. It's like that logic where the mob boss roughs up everyone on town and shakes them down and says to all the businesses, you got to give me 20% of your cut or we're going to come, you know, put a bunch of gobbledygooky, gabagool, bump prosciutto in your fucking throat or whatever those guys do. Shouts to Italians. And he's trying to do that to countries. He's trying to say to Denmark, hey, Denmark, watch your shit and give us some money. And Denmark's just like, no. I got some ads on Instagram telling me to move to Denmark. Let me know if you're getting ads on it. If you're in America, let me know if you're getting ads on social media for citizenship and jobs in other countries. Let's see. Scrolling down to, I laid this out nearly 6 months ago after Scott Bessent was named Treasury Secretary, sketched out this entire policy last year in an interview explaining his green, yellow, red theory. Essentially, he would put every country in a box with those three colors. This is how you get in the green box. This is how you stay in the green box. If you're India, you want to have 20% tariffs. You want to buy sanctioned Russian oil, you're in the yellow box. And by the way, if you keep buying that oil, you're moving towards the red box. Although we're not tariffing Russia with the new tariffs. You know, the new tariffs aren't targeting Russia, which is interesting. Skipping ahead a paragraph, Trump believes that every relationship is zero-sum and transactional. There are no win-win arrangements with allies. They have to suffer for us to win. This is the problem, too, when all politics becomes political economy, right? When all political and geopolitical decisions are only framed in the context of economics. Maybe that's not good. You know, maybe people exist. And maybe political decisions should occasionally be made on the basis of how they affect people. What an idea. What a crazy, wild, impressive idea I'm having right there. You know, we're halfway to Half Dome. So we're quarter dome right now, guys. We are currently at quarter dome. Yeah, techno poverty brings this up. And I have, there's an article from 404 Media on the Switch 2 pre-orders thing I was maybe going to bring up. Lefty Lori, I too do not want a war with Russia. Apocalypse says California is apparently going to negotiate trade with other countries to bypass the tariffs. Wow. Definitely heading towards some forms of American balkanization, it seems. The problem with this logic is that America is not indispensable. We're not. We're not the special boy we thought we were. You know, we're sort of like, trying to think of an example here. Did anyone like grow up with a guy who was like a cool guy at school? You know, he was a tough guy, probably good at sports, probably one of the guys that got taller than everyone else early on. But then everyone else catches up. And then we're not afraid of him. We're not worried about him. We're not intimidated by him. And it undercuts this guy. We'll call him like a pseudo bully, a kind of jock type. It undercuts his sense of self because he's only ever known himself to be the tallest and the most intimidating. So what do we, you know, what does he do now? And that's what's basically happening. America has been this jock bully of other nations. And everyone else has kind of grown up. And there's other big jocks and tough guys and impressive people. And we don't have that intimidatory power that we once did. Countries are not alone. Corporation industry sectors are as well. Here's the head of the American Petroleum Institute with the slobbery note, corn on the cob. We welcome President Trump's decision to exclude oil and natural gas from new tariffs, underscoring the complexity of integrated global energy markets and the importance of America's role as a net energy exporter. We already know there's been some resistance from the oil and gas industry over his demand to increase production. Oh, great. So the oil industry, they're good. They're really good. Going on, and this is, again, a win from Senator Chris Murphy, who a year ago knew who Senator Chris Murphy was. You know, who cared who Senator Chris Murphy was? And now we're all like, oh, yeah, fuck yeah, Senator Chris Murphy. I've only seen Chris Murphy understand this, that this is just a loyalty test for virtually every business in the nation, a universal attempt to gather protection money. And Murphy, let me see where this is. Yeah, Murphy did a Blue Sky thread on this. I will put the link in the chat for all my Blue Sky users out there. Who is this? User 50 says, if you didn't grow up with a cool guy at school, you were the cool guy at school. I almost named one of the cool guys from my school when I was on that sort of, what's up, Omni? When I was ranting earlier, but I'm still so intimidated by the former cool guy from school that I'm worried that, you know, if he heard me, if he knew I said his name, he would come beat me up. And I don't want it. I don't want to get beat up. You know, I've come too far in life to get beat up by a bully. It's going to make myself a little bit bigger. You know, that's how I want to see myself. I want to take up more space. I want to not be afraid anymore. It's no different than using the leverage of government funding to force universities and law firms into submission. Yeah. And I think we'll talk about this more in a little bit because I want to hit this before we end the show today. But this is the Trump strategy we're seeing across the board now, right? Using money and economic leverage to get people to do what you want. In domestic terms, we're seeing corporations slash their DEI programs. We're seeing universities shut down or drastically change their Middle Eastern studies departments and kick out students and deport students and all sort of stuff. Shout out to anyone who watched the little video I made this week on the attack on education. I changed the thumb and title way too many times because it started off, it was like doing well, and then it was doing bad. Then I got all obsessed with like, how can I make it do better? But like, who really cares, right? We're testing stuff out. We're having fun. We're learning. We're growing. But this, so I eventually just said, you know what? Let's let go and let God. But that policy we're seeing happen is the same thing with these tariffs. It's not about actual global economic policy. It's about leveraging perceived economic power to make other people do what you want them to. And the scary thing here then is, like, under traditional neoliberalism, like old school American conservatism, there was at least this sense, even if we didn't like it, that we understood the underlying logic. The underlying logic was nothing other than the law of the market. And neoliberalism wanted to help shore up capital for the upper classes. It wanted to prioritize markets over people. And at a, you know, at a bottom line, we knew that the telos, the end goal of the system, was capital. But that's not what's happening here, right? Because stuff that Trump is doing domestically and internationally, it's not sound neoliberal policy. To be even more crass, it's not good capitalism. And that's what almost gets scary, because when it's just someone doing good capitalism, we can be like, this sucks, we don't like it. This is a system that values markets over individuals. We don't like that because we're people, we're not markets. If you're a market, stop watching the show. This is not for you, unless you want to do a super chat or sign up for Patreon and pay me $1,000,000,000. If you're a market, that's how you can sort of buy some indulgences. But and that's what freaks me out about this, is like, oh, this is just Trump bullying his way into power and influence, but for what? You know, like, for what? Like, what is the end goal here? I'm not even asking rhetorically. If people have thoughts on this, let me know. This goes on to say, these economic sanctions force businesses to supplicate one by one. Every industry or company will need to pledge loyalty to Trump in order to get sanctions relief, Murphy writes. It's correct, and it could come in the form of campaign support, corporate governance changes, or just raw cash. Anything is possible. And we saw this before he was elected, or as he got elected, where all of a sudden Meta changed all their policies towards Trump. And Zuck got all fucking alphaed up and chained up and black t-shirted up and Roganed up and all that sort of stuff, and changed their tune. And, like, you know, Tim Cook of Apple fell in line. Now Apple stock is dropping billions because of these tariffs. We'll see if Tim Cook is still slobbing on the knob like corn on the cob. Who knows? So this policy is an open invitation for corruption. Cool. Where you sit in relationship to Trump, who a cop just drove by. Boo. Where you sit in relationship to Trump, what donations you gave and what endorsements you've made will dictate your level of success. America is now a country where proximity to the king matters above any other business strategy. Yeah, it's like this totalitarian king shit. You know, it's not about the economy working well. It's not about the upper classes benefiting, though they will. Don't get me wrong here. It's about kissing the ring of the king. As Tim Wu writes, companies so dependent on government treatment don't innovate because they don't have to. The government relation departments rise well beyond their research and development departments. Most of all, I think the attempts to overlay coherence and trade policy on this set of actions really misses the point. There is no effort here to rewrite the rules of trade or reverse deindustrialization. It's actually more like a funhouse mirror version of the neoliberal era. Ooh, it was good. Using trade as a bargaining chip to win other policies in that era, the attraction of duty-free treatment was used to get countries in line. Now it's the stick of tariff sanctions. Yeah, I mean, if we really wanted to reindustrialize, if we really wanted to put jobs back in America, there's a lot of things you could do, but they would be focused on, you know, policies that I think would generally benefit workers. Workers, you guys ever heard of them? You ever heard of the working class? You ever heard of those guys? How do I do this? Let's look at, I'll talk about this in a second, but over at 404 Media, great headline. Sea of idiocy. Economists say Trump tariffs will raise price of Switch 2 and everything else. Little lead quote here. The policy announcement is astonishing for its stupidity. It seems like a joke. There's our guy. There's our big boy right there. Where did the chat go? Come back, chat. I need you. Let's see. Just catching up with the chat because I like you. Sorry, I'm just wiping my sloppy nose. Oh, no. Okay. Also, Michael Burns, you just had a commercial interrupt the stream, so that's turned on. Okay. Let me see if I can. I'm going to see if I can turn that off live. But I don't want to fuck things up, you know? I don't want to break shit. Let's see. Okay, so analytics, viewer activity. It's like I want to turn the ads off right now. Okay, here we go. I'm clicking save. Hopefully the stream didn't go away. Okay, I think our worst case scenario now is that there will be less. There will be less. So that's what we're hoping for, kids. That's what we're hoping for. But thanks for letting me know that. Oh, man. Okay, so that's Trump. We're just going to stare at him for a little bit. Yeah, I hope everyone's doing well. And by the way, if you're a regular member of the WCL family, I want you to know that when you're here, your family, you know, it's not, it's one of those things, you know, when people say like, it's not like home isn't the place, it's the people. And I'd like to think that for the streaming community, that's the point, right? The people, you know, not the place, not the platform. And I'll just say this, the platform that we're currently on, obviously YouTube is a thing, but it feels nice for me to be streaming with you all in a context where there is no corporation involved, where I'm not streaming on behalf of some company, where any money earned during the stream is not just going to some weird company, where anyone who signs up for my Patreon, the money they're paying is just like, I'm going to use it to make stuff. It doesn't go to some company that doesn't give two fucks. I shouldn't be saying any of this, but it makes me feel good. Makes me feel comfortable. All I got to worry about then is not saying anything that'll make YouTube kill my channel. That's it. Besides that, I can just be honest and hang out. So that's awesome. And I love it. We do get unlimited breadsticks and salad. So this article in 404 Media, you're looking, take it in. We're looking at the big boy one more time. It says, last week, the Financial Times reported that Nintendo shifted half of its production capability for the upcoming Switch due to Cambodia and Vietnam, in part to avoid Donald Trump's trade war on China. Wednesday morning, Nintendo formally announced Switch 2 and its price $449, which is $150 more than the Switch. A few hours later, Trump announced tariffs. There are going to be far more damage impacts on Trump's unilateral trade war on everyone than the price of an already expensive game console. I read something yesterday that did say, take all this with a grain of salt, do your own research, that if you are planning any big electronics purchases, gaming systems, laptops, phones, iPads, shit like that, do it this summer. Supposedly, it's going to take, and someone probably knows more about this in the chat, but what I was reading, I think it was on The Verge, they had an article about this, basically implied that it's going to take a few months to adjust because current inventory will sell at standard prices. So it's not going to be until increased inventory made with parts that have gotten tariffed higher, the prices will jump up. So it does sound like a thing, like if you're going to get a laptop this year and you're going to wait till October and you can afford it, it sounds like do it sooner than that. I don't know. Take that for what you will. I'm bad at computer and I don't know how money works. The U.S. stock market has already plunged, but the timing and narrative around the Switch 2 highlights how destabilizing this is likely to be. The interconnectedness of the global economy and the fact that Trump cannot just snap his fingers in onshore manufacturing. Yeah, like you can't just do that. It's not how it works. Gamers are pissed. And award-winning economists say they're right to be. You gotta love it when gamers are pissed about something that's not like a game has a black character, you know? I like that. I like when gamers are mad about fucked up economic policy. I like that way better than when gamers are like, that character should have different tits or something, you know? Shouts to gamers. I know that all the gamers who are here are parts, you're part of the good ones. And I get it. I'm a part of a community where there's good people and there's bad people, you know? Yeah, I'm talking about deadheads. There's a lot of deadheads that are good people and they're kind and they're nice. And there's some deadheads that are just these like Wall Street bro pieces of shit who I hate. The policy announcement is astonishing for its stupidity. Gene Grossman, a global trade expert and Princeton professor who won the Onassis Prize in International Trade, told 404 Media. It seems like a joke. Again, this is a award-winning Princeton economist saying that the policy announcement is astonishing for its stupidity. Seems like a joke, he added. Yeah, he said that it's a sea of idiocy. Since Trump's announcement, it has become clear that the administration calculated the tariffs for each country based on a crude formula that takes each country's trade deficit with the United States, divides it by 2, and 6% sign at the end. That's insane. This means new tariffs on Vietnamese-made goods will be at 46%. New tariffs on Cambodian-made goods will be 49%. Also, just like from a practical perspective, having to navigate all that separately based on a dumb algorithm. Because this is the thing too. And I know there's, I know it's complicated to talk about expertise because there are people who are like experts who are fucking idiots. Like Larry Summers, economist from Harvard, who advised Obama, bad guy. And just because he's a Harvard guy and an economist doesn't mean we should take him seriously. Chris Maverick, you should take seriously. Dr. Professor Chris Maverick of Pittsburgh, Lord of Pittsburgh. But what we have now is a government being run that completely disregards expertise, that disregards research, that disregards academic training. We'll talk more about academia stuff and education before the stream's over, I promise. You know, so they're just riffing. They're just doing stuff. They're just doing what feels good. They're basing things off vibes and ChatGPT recommendations. And I think like we're in a position now where we have, we're disregarding economists and political theorists, disregarding public health experts. At every level of the government, they're basically purging experts and replacing them with weird tech guys. And this is a bit of a tease. So I'm working on a video about Brian Johnson, the guy who wants to live forever and takes his baby boy's blood and does boner competitions with his son. That's a real thing. It'll be in the video, but he did boner tracking to see how many nighttime boners he got and how many nighttime boners his kid got. It's kind of weird that he had to say to his son, hey, wrap this thing around your pee-pee before bed. Daddy's going to track what your pee-pee does when you sleep. That's weird. Did any of your dads ever say that to you? I don't think so. I hope not. If they did, don't say it here. You know? But where was I going to go with this? Oh, yeah. So that guy, his whole thing. And again, I don't want to give this up. I have a video that's coming out on April 21st. But his whole philosophy is that humans should give up our rational capacity to algorithms and generalized intelligence. So his thing is like, if we really want to be the best, just focus on your body and let algorithms do the rest. Don't even use your mind. And it sucks for so many reasons. And he thinks he's doing something that relates to Plato and Socrates, which makes me want to do bad stuff to myself. But that's the logic we're seeing here, right? That's the logic of a certain type of, I guess to be very loose here, we could say techno-fascist type of person, where rather than economists who understand that like economics and political economy is a social science that involves not just numbers, but involves understanding people and culture and the social effects of these things, they just want the computer to tell them what to do. They want computer to tell them. Let's see. COVID messed him up and he won't mask to live longer. That's crazy. Hey, we're almost to half dome. So there you go. You know, you didn't join the stream at the wrong moment. Yeah, I watched that, let's see. I just want to see, this is, someone says, CG, a little behind, but I think the logic with the lack of tariffs on Russia are because we already have huge sanctions against them. Okay, fair. I appreciate that. I appreciate you breaking that down. Sean says YouTube notifications late as fuck. I know. I think YouTube's getting used to me existing. YouTube's getting used to my existence. So there you go. Everything computer. They want everything computer. I'm going to put a comment on screen and simply say this. That the corporation that owns the place that I work at is bad, and that they are actively trying to find a new home for the brand that I work for, and that money pledged to that brand via any crowd sourcing thing is just being funneled to that corporation. Does that say it? Thanks for calling me Roots, Sean. I forgot about that, but I love it. Okay, let's see. I'm gonna hit some more stuff. Oh yeah, Henry, I'll send you a link in a few. We'll talk about some stuff. We'll get Henry on in a sec, guys. And just Henry, if he's gonna come on as a guest, he's not actively producing. He can just hang and be his handsome, smart self. So since Trump's announcement, it's become clear that the administration calculated the tariffs. Oh, we already read that. The switch to is something consumers are dying to have at any price. The price will go up, but consumers can readily switch to something else. No pun intended. Then if Nintendo wants to sell these things, it'll have to lower the price, Grossman said. Kimberly Clausing, a professor of tax law and policy at UCLA, told 404 Media that the tariffs announced will definitely increase prices further over what is baked into price levels currently. And the Nintendo will have other markets they can sell to tariff-free, so they'll have no reason to sell at a special low price. Felix Tintelnot, an associate professor of economics at Duke, shouts to Duke, told 404 Media, that was a White Lotus reference, not anything dark, told 404 Media it can be costly for companies to change their publicly announced prices. She says, I think two things are true at the same time. One, it is likely that Nintendo did not expect the tariffs on Vietnam to be 46%. Two, it's costly for firms to change prices, particularly after publicly announcing one. And then we finally got, I got to read this quote because I used to work at the school. Jason Cherubini, an executive in residence of finance at Loyola University, Maryland. I used to teach there. It's maybe my favorite place I ever taught by some metric. Shout out to any Loyola University alum. Said it's possible Nintendo had already priced in some unknown level of tariffs prior to the announcement. Let's see. I'm going to scroll down. There are numerous practical problems with trying to bring manufacturing jobs back to the United States. They include the fact that lots of factory work is so underpaid and growing that people in China don't even want to do it anymore. The average age of factory workers in China is rising, and companies there have begun shifting jobs to more developing nations like Vietnam and Cambodia. Globalization, economics, industrialization, they work in very particular ways is all I will say. Nintendo is now a luxury. Parker Posey is a goddamn treasure. That is true. Blink twice. I'm not in danger. I'm just gonna, I don't know how to click anything. What am I clicking? How can I do this? I'm clicking things and then things are going on screen and it's like, I don't even know what this is doing. I can't, oh my God. What am I doing? Oh, what is that? I can't even control it. Many of the raw materials and components needed for tech manufacturing are not mined in the United States. Yeah, I mean, the thing is, too, is the genie is out of the bottle, to be cliche here, guys. We're not just going to magically bring all the manufacturing back to America. Your laptops are not going to be built here. You know, our switches aren't going to be built here. You know, Cherubini says that reshoring electronics manufacturing is not something you can just flip a switch on. Optimistically, you're looking at a year for simpler manufacturing, but a lot of it is a multi-year process. That is all to say, based on where things stand this morning, we are in for a world of economic pain. I'm just going to post the link to the article down there. What am I clicking? Okay. Is Tesla the Teasler? Oh, man. William says, we all have the shittiest internet, the oldest computers, the work knockoff, selling up garbage. I do think that is true. You know, like we're already taking steps backwards as a nation. And I think that it is only going to get worse. I'm sorry that that is true. I don't want that to be true. I don't like that, you know? I don't think that's cool. Let me see if I can find something that we can check out together. Here we go. Let's see. Yeah, I got a couple things I want to look at. Oh, I hate that this is in shorts format. Let's see. I'm going to make this work. Let's see what this looks like. Okay. Hold on one second, guys. I'm just going to make this. I'm going to see if I make this shit look different. What if we just go like that a little bit? Oh, no. Maybe we'll do this. That helps a little bit. Okay. So I want to talk about this abundant shit a little bit. Here, I'll watch this clip, and then I'm going to shoot a link to Henry if Henry wants to come on. But no pressure. And just a reminder for anyone who's showing up, hanging out, my name is Michael Burns. This show, I'm calling it What Are They Doing? I'm trying out some different formats. you know, I'm aiming to make my main videos on this channel oriented around the idea, what are we doing? You know, like, what are we doing? Like, what's happening? What is going on? And this stream, at least, I want it to be called, what are they doing? Because we're trying to figure out what the idiots that are in charge of stuff are running. I'm also starting a thing, and I'm saying this because I want to know what you guys think about it. I kind of want to call it community college or something. Maybe that's a little silly, but I'm going to start ideally a weekly stream series where I'm going to bring on like academics, writers, philosophers, economists, political theorists, shit like that. And have them talk about something they think is really important. And we'll just talk for an hour. Ideally, there'll be some sort of like reading component that I can attach. So if there's people that you think would be cool, like I'm definitely going to ask, you know, Danny Bestner to come do that. I've already asked Jared Henderson to come do that. Some of these people haven't confirmed yet. So like, I maybe shouldn't be saying that. So if there's people who you just think are smart and interesting, let me know. Cause I want to bring them on and let me know if that sounds like a fun thing to do. Early months of solo YouTube is like the early months of college. Time for exploration. I just want to explore the bodies of other people digitally. Burned you. Oh, I will burn you. I could do burned you and make the logo like PragerU. That'd be kind of funny. DEI sessions. Fuck, that's good too. You guys are great. God damn it. I think I have a good idea. And then you goddamn geniuses come in here. What the fuck is going on is cool too. Okay, so I want to check this out because, you know, I love when he talks about dialectics all the time. Yeah. So the abundance stuff is still happening. And it's very much becoming clear that the abundance agenda is like Silicon Valley tech libertarianism or something. You know, it's like a new form of libertarian by people that think that they know what to do and that like have gay friends or something like that, you know? Yeah. And I think bringing on non-pros, that's 100% true. I want to get like activists and people on that are in these streets. Yeah. I don't really know Joshua Citrell. I've been liking his show. I didn't like his show, but now I think I like his show. I liked the Andrew Callahan episode that came out this week. Old Grease, you miss nothing and everything all at once. That's how it works. But feel free to like email me or reach out on social media as well. If there's people you guys would like to see me bring on. And if you're on the Patreon, message me there. I think even if you're on the free Patreon, you can still message me, I think. And I would say even if you're not on the pay money Patreon, which is totally fine. Like you got enough stuff going on in your life. Sign up for the free one. Cause I'm going to post some stuff there and then you'll always know when I'm doing shit. Oh, I meant to post this stream on the Patreon so people knew. I'll get them next time. Okay. Let's watch this. This is from, Pod Save America and Ezra Klein defending himself.
You mentioned some of the critique from the left. I'm sure you've read all of it. Read most of it. I'm sure you've talked about the Zephyr Teachout review of Abundance. I wanted to get your reaction to one part of that because I think it summarizes a lot of the criticism on the left. I mean, you mentioned the Bernie side. There's also a Warren-esque critique as well.
And Jon Favreau sucks fuck. But if you're like getting criticized, ooh, Heather Cox, yeah. If like Elizabeth Warren is coming hard at you, like you're not that progressive, you know?
Right. I still can't tell after reading Abundance whether Klein and Thompson are seeking something fairly small bore and correct, we need zoning reform, or non-trivial and deeply regressive, we need deregulation, or whether there's room within Abundance for anti-monopoly politics and a more full-throated unleashing of American potential.
Is it just me or does his face look so smug that when he's like anti-regulation, it's just like there's a smugness to this guy that I really don't like. A couple times I've almost applied for a job at Crooked. And then I've just thought to myself, like, I couldn't work with this guy.
Matt Brunig has a similar critique. He says it would be a huge mistake to sideline whatever focus there is on welfare state expansion and economic egalitarianism in favor of a focus on administrative burdens in construction.
Look at his little eye roll, smug face. Look at him right there. Looks like he's jacking off to a Milton Keynes article or something.
It's not a book about, like, monopolistic power practices and corporate concentration. So I get that. I guess to the question that Teachout asked, is there room in Abundance for a critique of concentrated economic power.
And it's just clear too that the two guys, they're just like mid 40s douche bros from the same class, like these technocratic guys who've never had real jobs, who have just been at the teat of the Democratic Party and the media establishment. And then, so they're just, I imagine, I know that we see both of their hands, but I imagine that Favreau's doing toe stuff to Klein under it, using his foot to just kind of rub on it there. And maybe Klein's foot is also going like that. And they're both just like, yeah. But it just like sucks that, you know, Pod Save America is sort of presenting their whole brand as the like vaguely progressive media ecosystem. And he's asking Ezra Klein questions about this project, but he's basically being like, yeah, you have a bunch of critics and they say this stuff or whatever. It just sucks. It's like a lack of seriousness in the dialogue.
And anti-monopoly politics and all that.
I'm trying to think about the nicest way to say this. My friends in the whole problem is oligarchy part of the party. And I believe a good part of our problems are oligarchy. But there are certain kinds of problems they're then willing to see and certain kinds they're not as willing to see. Mm-hmm. So in housing, I find a lot of them get obsessed with this idea that private investors are buying up a bunch of rental houses.
They are. They just are. This is a true thing. This is a factual thing. It's a truth. It's factual. Everything is satisfactual. Zippity-doo-dah. Suck my dick, Ezra Klein. But...
And this is an extremely small part of the market right now, and is just not the main problem in housing.
This reminds me of, I forget the guy's name, who during the election, who's the guy, he ran for office in Minneapolis. He tweets a lot about policy stuff. And he was one of those people whose whole thing during the election was, actually, the economy is great. Actually, inflation isn't bad. Shut up if you say your life is bad. Life's really great. And then, of course, economic data comes out that's like, oh, no, it is really bad for people. Just imagine, like, I'm assuming that Ezra Klein owns a nice apartment in Manhattan. If he doesn't own a nice apartment, he rents a luxury apartment or whatever. Maybe he owns a property in California as well. I don't know this factually. I'm just guessing. And like, it's one of those things where he's read some stuff on paper, but it feels completely disconnected from the concerns of most people. I don't know everyone, you know? Shouts to Jim Gaffigan in Flight of the Conchords when he says, how many people have you met? It's one of my favorite moments from any show ever. But I live in a city. I know lots of different types of people here. And I know that most people's experience is struggling with corporate landlords and private landlords and folks buying up housing, whether they use them as long or short-term rentals. This is a problem.
But because it is the villain they are comfortable having, it is where they want to put their focus. Kamala Harris, I was very excited when she brought out her big plan to build 3 million units of housing, but her plan never would have achieved anything like it. It did have a big thing about trying to do something about this private investor buying up housing issue, though. So you can really get, I think, taken off the track. A thing I found like really interesting.
I guess it's a question of power, right? If their plan, and I'll be honest, I haven't read the Abundance book. I've thought about reading it and making a video about it. I don't know if it's too late. No one cares anymore. Let me know if you guys think that would be at all interesting. Oh shit. I'm going to send a link to Henry. I forgot to do that. You don't have to come on. Will Stancil's who I'm talking about. Yeah. Let's see. Will Stancil's definitely the guy I was talking about. Okay guys, I'm just going to say we're, you know, Ann Porgins, thank you so much. Slop City. Klein has no spine. I love it. Klein is not fine. David's really going for it. David is like the Dr. Seuss of making fun of Ezra Klein. Justin, thank you so much. Ooh, Justin, you just finished Capitalist Realism. I don't know. I'm really on this Frederick Jameson wave. So read some Frederick Jameson. I'll show you a book. I brought this up so many times. I like it. It's this one. An American Utopia. It's Jameson, and then it's essays by a bunch of other people. Kim Stanley Robinson, Jody Dean, Agon Hamza, Kojin Scaritani, Frank Rita, Alberto Scano, Slavoj Žižek. And hopefully I'll have another code soon, but I will say if you get any Verso books, you can use the, there's like a Wisecrack code and you get a discount on it. But I recommend checking that out. Let's see. Okay. Sorry. Let me do one thing. How do I do this? I'm so bad at computer. Okay, hold on. Just sending Henry a link if he wants to pop on, but there's no pressure. Henry, no pressure. I'm going to watch a, I'm going to finish this clip. Oh, what I was going to say though is power, right? If the goal of the Abundance Bros is to pull away regulation, and I get why the argument's compelling. I really do. If they're saying like, we need more housing, which is true, and it's hard to construct housing because of various regulations, which is also true, then if we release that regulation, housing will be built. It sounds good, but I always think of it in terms of power, like who then has power? You know what I'm saying? If regulations are lifted on the construction of housing, does that give you more power as a working person and a renter? Maybe. I don't think so. Maybe it gives you more consumer choice, but it's going to give more power to the real estate industry and the people who are responsible for building housing.
Thing in Zephyr's review was that, is it something good and small like zoning reform? And like, try doing zoning reform if you think it's small, right? Or something bad like deregulation. Okay, interesting, right?
Yeah.
Deregulation is a word that I think...
It is. I agree with him there. Deregulation is in fact a word.
Shuts liberals down a bit. And it shouldn't. A lot of what we're pointing out in the book is that the player that is often most regulated is not the market. It's the government itself. If you want to understand why the government can't build public housing effectively, I mean, in many ways, the federal government building public housing is now functionally illegal. It's been regulated out of possibility. If you want to know why we didn't build California high-speed rail, if you want to know why it's so expensive to build affordable housing in a lot of liberal jurisdictions when you trigger public money, it is because of the regulations we put on government.
I just still, again, or I think there's problems here. Oh, Henry's here, guys. I'm going to
check.
Pull up. Hey, Henry, how you doing? Ooh, cool background.
Hey, yeah. Thank you for having me on. I'm sorry. I just heard him say the reason they didn't get the rail in California is because of regulations. And my brain just instantly went like, didn't Elon like just tank it because he said he was going to build Hyperloop?
I definitely think that was a big part of it. This. There we go.
Whoa.
Yeah, we're getting crazy here. Now let me see if I pulled it.
Howdy, howdy, everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think like someone said, why not just argue for anarchy? Yeah, because I just
right?
when they make the argument, though, that like it's because of a lack of regulation on the government, well, then what are you really advocating for? Are you advocating for increased government power and centralized power in the government, which I think is like a different thing than arguing for like deregulation in general? And I guess I just, whenever someone like, I just, something about the smugness with which he keeps responding to critiques that have been levied by smart and interesting people, I find so annoying.
Also, it feels like a total dodge of the actual like populist interest in the class divide and the economic inequality out there that we know there's an appetite to be discussed about, because, you know, we see Sanders and AOC going around engaging with that, as well as, you know, just general pop culture and popular sentiments across the board. And they're just like, okay, but tomorrow, imagine it's 2050 and we have all these cool things because we just let the market be. It's like, well, we're letting the market be right now and we're not getting to 2050.
Yeah. Oh, thank you, Justin Stoll. What was I about to say? I mean, it just reminds me too of this sort of the thing that I feel like the Ezra Klein's of the world do is reinvent worse versions of existing left-wing policy in a way that's more like palatable to the Atlantic readership.
Yeah. Somebody in the chat's going real fast. Wow. Said it was like liberal fanfic, and that's exactly it. From what I understand, again, I know that it talks a lot in the book itself. It opens, they talk in the reviews and such about how it does open and like, imagine the future, like imagine away from here. And yeah, it's just, it's a new aspirational bubble to work towards that permits them to ignore everything else going on right now, because it's like, no, but we got to work on this for tomorrow.
Yeah, no, for sure. Reform. It's better than deregulations, as dog formerly known as a cat. I mean, I think it's interesting too that in the interview that Ezra Klein did with, what's the guy's name? Josiah Citrella, what are they, the guy that does the Doom Scroll show? He was referencing some of like the more accelerationist, like luxury communism text. And that's where I kind of think like, if you're going to go down that road, R says, what's your beef with the Pod Save guys and Ezra Klein? I'll only speak for myself. My beef with the PodSave guys is their big thing is like manufacturing consent for the Democratic Party. And much of what they've done in all of their work is uncritically support mainstream Democratic policy while really downplaying things ranging from police violence to economic violence to an ongoing genocide. My beef with Ezra Klein is a similar thing. I know it's what we're talking about now. I think he's offering these sort of like compelling, and I mean that genuinely. He's a good writer and a good communicator. I mean that very earnestly. I'm not being sarcastic here, but kind of just gives us slightly better versions of the neoliberal policies that already exist under the guise of like, but I'm a smart guy, so trust me.
Yeah, and at best faith, I do wonder if they don't realize, like, they've just been conditioned to believe, like, okay, if we just present the best, like, presentation of affect to the machine, it'll adopt that affect. Like, it seems like a very ineffectual mode of engaging politically with the landscape, but, I mean, are they that naive, or is this a more cynical thing?
Yeah, and I think this relates to what people are asking what we're talking about. Lefty Laurie said this in the chat, a few other people did as well. Watch Skip Intro's latest, shouts to Jackson on the West Wing, and that's such a liberal fantasy, it hurts. Yeah, I mean, I think like the West Wing philosophy is the sort of thing that infects a lot of these people, that applies to a lot of them. And yeah, and Chris Maverick in the chat brings up that liberal fanfic is a good way of thinking about it.
Yeah, there's like an indulgence in like martyrdom of like, God damn it, I tried. Like, sure, things are bad now, but you got to respect that I tried, and please like me that I tried. And I that is what sticks out to me about like Sorkinisms as far as liberals like representation in pop culture.
Yeah, and yeah, they're 08 Obama guys, and it's, of course too, like, you know, one might be like, you know. Oh, but aren't there much worse guys than the Pod Save America guys? Of course. Of course. But in a weird way, it's like there's the objectively like bad guys, right? And we know that the bad guys are the bad guys. And we know that a lot of well-meaning liberal people or young progressives aren't going to all of a sudden be like, oh, I don't know. I think Candace Owens has a point or whatever. The scary thing with Pod Save America is they have an ability to suck up the energy,
yes,
of very well-intentioned progressive people. And I've had like talks before with people who I know are really empathetic, kind, principled people who want a political system that reflects that kindness and empathy, who love Pod Save America and will get mad at me if I make fun of it too glibly. And I get it. Like, it is a mainstream media source that presents itself as doing something progressive. But, you know, and I think we see this when like Hassan has gone on a couple times, and then it sort of allows you to see what it looks like when they talk to someone with actual progressive policies.
Yeah, this is part of why like there is leftist Democratic infighting, because it's like, what do you want like the popular perception of the left or Democrats to be? I just think about during the Biden era, I had a friend who very much went down the pipeline of like, hey, you're too lefty, you're enabling fascists, you're being a Nazi yourself. And it's like, how does someone who I know, I've personally known since high school, and they know I'm never voting for the right, like, how do they get to the point where they believe something like that about someone to the left of them on policy?
Yeah.
And it speaks to kind of like the poisoned well of pop culture memetics, these kind of programs kind of perpetuate it
for sure. Trevor in the chat said, I'll say PodSave deserves some credit for having Hassan on twice. Yeah, but I think like they should just have more of those folks on. Driftking says, brother, ask again, what am I supposed to do? What's up, Driftking 305? You know, Driftking, I want to talk about this more later too, and we'll see if we can get her on the chat about it. I don't know if she's now off limits that she's a candidate, but I really like some of the stuff that Kat is doing in her campaign in terms of using her events to gather resources to be redistributed in the community. And the Jameson book I was referencing earlier, guys, American Utopia, a thing Jameson talks about is building dual systems of power. Cause Jameson's like, you're not going to elect some candidate to your city council that's going to start socialism in your city or whatever. So how do we build power, whether it's via mutual aid networks or parallel systems? And I do think, and Driftking, this isn't like the easiest thing to get at it. But I think that there's something cool to that model. And I think that it brings up the question of how we build parallel systems of power. Okay, we did go by five, so I will do half dome. I said I would do it, and I will do it. Thank you, Porkins, for doing that. Let's see. Ann Porkins says, you ever buy cat pizza? Here's what I'm going to say. This is honest, and I'm not trying to call anyone out here. I have offered to buy cat pizza. Since Kat has announced, she has not texted me back. I think Kat is very busy, but normally if I come on, if Kat comes here, if I go on her show or whatever, we'll text each other. And I texted her when she announced her campaign, and I haven't heard back. I assume she's very busy, so I'm going to hit her up soon. I imagine that maybe she has to be more intentional or thoughtful about media appearances and stuff like that now that she's a candidate. So I am going to, I'm going to wait a little bit, and then I'm going to see if she wants to come on. Mark, thank you. I think it's a pleasantly shaped dome as well, but we're back in the 400, so it's over. Screw you guys. Henry, tell people about Techno Poverty really quick and what you guys are.
Yeah, so Techno Poverty is a streaming show me and my co-host just started where we play video games and bounce books off of said video games, books within the same genre, with a live chat over on Twitch. We throw the stuff back up on YouTube because we always come up with some interesting thoughts, ideas, and rambles. We do it. But we do that twice a week, Mondays and Thursdays. Right now, we just finished Maximo Ghost to Glory, which is a PS2 swords and sorcery game. We used to talk about Yates and Lord Dunsany and Ursula Le Guin, George R.R. Martin, Philip K. Dick. I'm naming dropping a bunch of authors, but basically we were talking a lot about like the idea of ghosts in fiction. And I think I do believe in ghosts, but not in the spooky ectoplasmic, something from the supernatural realm sense, but much more in like, there's this idea Philip K. Dick presents in his novel Ubik about how we're guided by ghosts. There's a character in that book that lives in the 1990s, gets sent back to the 1930s, thinks that they're going to be okay, that they can kind of tough it out because they're healthier, they know things, they know history, etc., they have foresight. But just in the day-to-day, the basic culture and the memetics and just the way relationships are arranged is so radically different that he starts going insane. But it's a book kind of trying to get across that we are guided by ghosts, that beyond biological reproduction, people make art, they write books, there's ideas and ways of thinking that are molded over time memetically through, ideology and material conditions and consequences of history. And I don't know, Techno Poverty, I guess, describes a mindset I'm trying to articulate in the now about how video games have molded the past two decades, maybe, of the larger cultural economy. And we see that in like the app economy, the gigification of everything, the burrito loan sharks that are about to start appearing. That. We're going to be living in a very snow crash-esque reality. But yeah, it's also just a time to kind of chill, chat with us. And I don't know, there's a casual kind of conversational understanding of art I like to play with and perpetuate because I think there's too much like a hustle grind set mentality when it comes to consuming books and productivity and like ingesting art. And even the way video games are presented online in some ways is, hyper competitive things. I think we can demystify with a more, just come chill on the couch with us. Let's talk some fiction.
I want to look at one thing before the show wraps up because I put it on the thumb. So I'd be a liar if I didn't talk about this, but I wanted to, I'm thinking about education stuff a lot because it's something that I always think about a lot. I will, in case anyone wants to see it or hasn't checked it out, I did a video on the student deportation stuff, which sucks so much ass.
Abolish ICE.
So many ways. Yeah, definitely abolish ICE. You can check that video out if you want. But there's an article that gets at some of the stuff, and this relates to the same stuff we were talking about with the tariffs. Trump using, this sort of bully power. This is from AP. K-12 schools must sign certification against DEI to receive federal money, administration says. So they're literally holding schools hostage and making them ideologically commit to certain things to get money. This article is from yesterday. As a condition of receiving federal money, the Trump administration's ordered K-12 schools to certify they are following federal civil rights laws and ending any discriminatory diversity, equity, and exclusion practices. It's so insane that we're at a place now where like discriminatory diversity practice, what? Like it's just a lot. You know, I just think there's so many problems with all of this. And that these schools could lose money and that this could negatively affect students. And of course, the government has already used similar tactics at a bunch of universities. The initial February memo this is based on declared that federal law prohibits schools and colleges from using race in decisions related to admissions, hiring, financial aid, housing, student life, and more, because race isn't real, I guess. Although they're allowed to do Black History Month. So that's cool, I guess. It's just, yeah. This is from the American Federation of Teachers at the bottom. It says he's wielding a cudgel of billions of federal aid to tens of millions of children of all races and ethnicities to force educators to kowtow to his politics and ideology. And yeah, like that's what's happening. All of this power is being used to make people think what he thinks.
There's a Lindy Man tweet I sent you in Telegram that I think just gets straight to the underlying id of all this.
I'm sick of seeing the depressing Walmart towns with the obese Americans in flyover country. I'm sick of the dollar stores. Everything has to change. No more cheap goods. No more Chinese or Vietnamese trinkets. No more obesity. Every man must work in a factory or be a cobbler. Jesus Christ. Yeah.
They're trying to just like reverse engineer like this traditionalist mid-century nuclear family idea back into the country. And it really is just real divorce guy hours right now. It's the divorce dad wanting to just wind everything back. And it's going to be like, nope, we're still going to get our suburb. We're still going to get our suburb, right?
Yeah. Josh Wilson in the chat says, Klein didn't say deregulate the market. He says we should make it easier for government agencies to do their jobs. If this is working in government, lobbying is important. Yeah. And I just hope, I don't think that's like, in terms of what you're saying there, Josh, I don't disagree that as a physicist working in a lab, that what you should do should be easier. I agree with that. I guess it's maybe just a matter of being critical over the way that he wants to get there or thinks that we should get there. Porkins in the chat says a lot of special education programs are funded federally, so it's awesome that our most in need students may face shortages due to ideological own libs bullshit. Yeah, like that sucks. Like it really sucks. There's no other way I can really put it other than that sucks.
And yeah, the simultaneous like torching of 401ks through the stock destruction and then just the gutting of Social Security. There's going to be a lot of older folks with no nowhere to go. It's very worrying. That's kind of a huge, I don't know, that's an anxiety driver for me.
Yeah. Okay, guys. Well, I wanted to keep this at a tight hour. I went over a little bit. Henry, thank you for popping in.
Yeah,
guys. I'll be back for this on Friday. I'm taking a few days off next week. I'm so excited. It's been a while. Every day I've taken off recently has been because I'm like sick or exhausted. So I'm actually taking a few days off to just relax. Sure. So I'm excited for that. Everyone, make sure you're subbed to Techno Poverty. Does it matter if they do Twitch or YouTube, Henry? Is it sort of all good?
It's all good. If you're on Twitch, you'll be getting the newer stuff sooner, and also you'll be able to actually participate in like the live chat stuff. We but like that. it all goes up on YouTube eventually if you just want to watch.
Yeah, and we'll give the last word today to Ann Porkins. I work in special ed, and I'm just waiting for Americans with Disabilities Act to get struck down somewhere. My God, I hope not. Fuck, man. Shit is tough. Okay, everyone have a great weekend. Thank you for hanging out. Thank you to Henry for joining us. We'll see you all soon.